She hadn't been sleeping much compared to the previous weeks when it seemed like that was all she did. She was so tired lately that by the time she got home from so-and-so's house or from a family readiness group meeting, she turned on Netflix and passed out on the couch less than halfway through an episode. But then she would be wide awake and on the phone at 3 in the morning. She continued to sleep on the couch, saying it was less lonely than a bed. She slept holding onto a body pillow, and I started to wonder if I would be less lonely if I tried one, too. I had a new philosophy of late. Every single hour of sleep meant less time awake to face my shit show of a life. Less of a chance of confronting my brother. More time in my bed also meant less of a chance of running into Kale. Less of a chance of dealing with anything that I didn't want to deal with. By the time I got off work and finished pulling the weeds that were taking over my yard, or cleaned the house, or even just stared at the crack in the kitchen ceiling, it was almost time to wake up and repeat it all over again. The problem was that all of those mind-numbing tasks actually had the opposite effect on me. My mind was anything but numb. My thoughts constantly churned and spun as I tried to make sense of everything that had gone down. Prior to Kale, Brian was my only point of reference as an ex, and our breakups never bothered me this way. I was always the less emotional one, the one who didn't cry and didn't budge when I thought I was right. He was the apologizer, at least in the beginning. Over the course of our relationship, he wore me down, and now, with him completely out of my life, I knew that our relationship had felt so big to me because it was the closest I had ever been with a man. In his case, a boy pretending to be a man. But most men that I'd met seemed to be in that class. But, you know, daddy issues and all that. Given the man who raised me, it was only natural for me to attract men who weren't good for me. Not Kale, though. Kale was an exception to nearly every rule. Every preconceived notion I had about men and relationships, he had proved them wrong. Until he didn't. What he did was reinforce that I should never trust people I barely knew. Well, trusting anyone was risky since I couldn't trust Austin, my dad, or even myself lately. I couldn't think about Austin and how he was throwing his life away and was a coward for avoiding me. Or Kale and how he was helping him do just that. Ugh, my mind was all over the place, making my heart race to try to keep up. It felt completely devastating at first, calling my brother at least 20 times, texting him long rants about my anger, and even apologies about the rants. It became a cycle. I avoided my dad's stupid dinners the way Austin avoided me. I was growing tired of being the only person in my family who ever held themselves accountable. I was clearly still angry at Austin for not even trying to talk to me about it or apologizing. The whole situation was completely unresolved, and it made me sick thinking about it. Maybe it was time to cut him out of my life? I couldn't decide today. But this total blackout of communication was driving me mad, and I needed to keep my head as clear as possible by reminding myself daily that I couldn't change anything about this. I couldn't undo his contract with the army, and I couldn't make him take accountability and have a conversation with me. I didn't even know exactly where Kale's house was, so I couldn't just show up there to force Austin to explain himself to me. I mentally had to come to terms with the fact that Austin was actively choosing himself over my feelings about his choices and that he didn't care about hurting me the way that I thought he did. Water splashed on my feet, and I looked down to see it leaking over the edge of the kitchen sink, soaking my only pair of work shoes. I barely remember turning the water on. What the hell was wrong with me? Quickly, I yanked the spout to shut the water off and let some of it drain while I grabbed a towel and threw it onto the floor, using my feet to dry the spillage. I added a ton of purple lavender dish soap to drown out the scent of the rest of the dishes. The pan from the other night was so blackened that I could still smell the burnt cheese. That, mixed with the humidity outside, did not create a good aroma in such an old house. My fingers moved across a smooth ceramic plate. In the soapy water, I could feel the inscription of the date that Estelle and my dad promised to love one another until death did them part. I was surprised that the fragile wedding gift had lasted so long in my chaotic little house. Chapter 6. The kitchen door opened, and the sound of Elodie's native language glided through the room. She sounded upset, but I couldn't make out what she was saying. I had picked up a couple French words from her, but nothing that led to actual understanding. When I looked at her, she mouthed, "Sorry," and made her way to the counter. Her arms were full of grocery bags and a coffee tray that she was about to drop. She was wearing her work uniform, like I was, but had a rain jacket over it, with the hood pulled down. Her blonde hair was dry, up in a little bun on her head. I grabbed a towel to wipe the soap off my hands and reached to help her. The bags were heavier than they looked. One of them was filled with packs of construction paper, glue, and scissors. She really shouldn't have been carrying that much at once. The female voice on the other end of the line got much louder, almost barking out of the speaker, and Elodie took the phone away from her ear. "My parents," she said to me as she set the bags down on the table. I didn't know very much about her parents, except that they weren't exactly thrilled when their daughter left France to marry an American soldier. It wasn't common to meet French citizens in military communities like this one. I had known a lot of wives from South America and Mexico, and one from Germany, but never from France. Elodie had an entirely different life here in Georgia than what she had known in France. Everything from the food to medical care to social norms was different in Europe than it was in the southern US. In France, she lived with her parents in a town where everyone knew everyone. She often talked about how quiet life here was, how pleasantly boring it was. When Philip got back from deployment in Afghanistan, her life would be easier and better, and things would run smoothly. Or so I hoped. But I worried about the anger in his voice that I heard during their Skype conversations, and the way she was so defeated. I hoped their tension was just a phase, and they were just having the standard newlywed, husband is deployed, wife is pregnant fights that many couples went through. I knew my optimism was mostly feigned. Elodie, still on the phone, moved toward the door, and I stopped her. "I'll get the rest. You can start putting them away," I said. She almost smiled, but whoever was on the phone said something that made her stop in her tracks and rest against the kitchen counter. She put the phone on speaker and dropped it onto the countertop. She spoke loudly, cutting against her mother's excessive volume and bite. I left the kitchen to get the rest of the stuff from the car, hoping that whatever was going on wasn't as bad as it seemed, and also hoping I would be quick enough to not get too soaked from the rain. I never had an umbrella or rain jacket when I needed one, and I had never owned rain boots. I was usually unprepared for regular life, and overly prepared for unlikely things. I had a full-on earthquake kit, for example, ready for the worst in southern Georgia, but no raincoat for the excessive rain that was the norm here. I opened the screen door as Elodie stared at the phone with her tongue between her teeth. Dashing out, I yelped a little when the rain hit me and ran faster, trying not to slip in the mud next to the pavement. In the open trunk, just behind the few bags that were left, was a folded-up baby stroller. It was light green and looked almost new, but it wasn't in a box. Sometimes I forgot there would be another human in my little house in a few short months. I reached in and touched the stroller, pausing for a moment before I grabbed the rest of the groceries and jogged to the back door of the house. The thick smell of wet soil filled the air. Another unfinished project of mine was to finish the landscaping in my yard. The home improvements I'd been putting off for so long were slowly getting done, though. I'd almost completed tiling the bathtub and had changed all of my ancient silver doorknobs to sleek and modern black ones, all within a freaking week. Neurotic? Or responsible? Maybe a little bit of both. A truck drove through the stop sign, and my stomach flipped. It wasn't Cale. It wasn't his truck, but it made me think of him and the sound of his loud Bronco and how the walls of my house would rattle when he revved his engine outside. The man driving the truck turned down the alleyway across the street, his big tires splashing rainwater everywhere. I was wet now, just standing in the rain like a lost puppy. I shut the trunk, hurried inside, and slammed the back door. Elodie was off the phone and sitting at the kitchen table. Her voice was brittle, her accent wrapping around her words more than usual. "I'm sorry about that." She sighed heavily, her eyes filling to the brim with tears. "They want me to come home."
"What?"
I sat down in the chair across from her and wiped the rain from my face. She looked a little stunned, and the tip of her nose was red. She had the palest, clearest skin and rosy cheeks. "What happened, Al? Are you okay?"
Someone wrote my parents a stupid lie, and they believed a stranger over me."
"What do you mean? Who wrote to them?" I asked, beyond confused.
"Someone on Facebook wrote my mom a message saying that Philip was cheating and these crazy things."
"Who was it? Do you know them?" She shook her head and didn't look at me as she said,
"I think it was a fake account. It's all so stupid and not true. I don't know why someone would do that or how they even found my parents."
I was at a loss for words, but I had so many questions. "Why the hell would someone do that?" I asked the room.
"I hate this," she said, her shoulders beginning to shake. "And my doctor called on the way back and said my glucose test came back really low. It's just a lot of stress."
Her phone vibrated again and Papa flashed on the screen. She flipped her phone over and pushed it away.
"I can't take much more. I can't."
She pressed her fingers against her temples. Her chest rose and fell as her phone shook on the table.
"They don't think I can do this. None of it. Be married, be a mother. It's so much, and the baby isn't even here yet."
She started to cry.
"I don't even have a place for the baby to live. I have no crib, nothing. I don't know what I'm doing."
I inched my chair closer to her.
"I'm sorry, Al. You're going to make a great mom. I know you are. I'm not just saying that either. I know you and your heart, and you're going to be fine. It will all be fine."
I tried to be as convincing as possible. The baby was on the way, and Elodie needed a confidence boost. I meant it, though. Every word. I knew all kinds of moms. The good, the bad, and the really bad.
"Karina, I'm serious. I'm all alone here. If I have the baby and Philip isn't home or gets hurt..."
She was physically shaking. I leaned across the table and grabbed one of her hands. It was ice cold. "You're freezing," I told her. She shrugged.
"I'm okay. I don't care about being cold right now," she said emotionally. "My parents think I can't handle any of this. My dad pretty much just told me that on the phone, and my mom agreed with him. They said they're scared. Scared!"
I was trying to process everything she was saying. "Scared is a little much," I said, kind of pissed at her parents for saying that to her. It was too late for that conversation, and their doubt only added to her stress. "I'm sorry they said that. They're wrong." She barely looked at me.
"They also hate my husband now. They think he's a liar and having an affair while I'm alone here."
She really stamped the word alone, and I felt like a bit of a failure for not making her feel like she wasn't alone. My heart broke for her because of their harshness. It reminded me of Kale saying, "People always have an opinion about others' choices, and even if it's harmful, the selfishness of unburdening themselves outweighs the hurt it can cause." More words of wisdom from the poet himself, Cale Martin. "You're not alone," I told Elodie, pushing Kale to the back of my mind. I couldn't have guessed how many seconds had gone between us since she spoke. She looked at me, and I knew that a defeated woman's eyes never lied. She was breaking right then, and I could feel it in the air, see it in her body language.
I have you, and I appreciate that and love you, but I'm used to my big family and my friends and my life back home.
She paused and seemed to tell herself to redirect her words. Guilt lay heavy on her face.
It is better having more friends now. But my baby will not have any family here. And how will I work? I don't make enough money for daycare. There aren't enough hours at the spa.
Elle, we live right here. I'll watch the baby while you work, and we'll make sure our schedules aren't the same. She was quick to remind me that our arrangement wasn't permanent.
Karina, my house will be far from work when Philip's back.
You could still drop the baby off here, I offered, trying to think of another fix for her problem.
You can't solve this for me. I know you want to, but you really can't help me with this. Maybe I shouldn't have gotten married at all. I came here so fast without knowing what it would be like and how much time I would be alone. My mom is right that I barely knew Philip before I got on a plane and was pregnant shortly after. I don't know what we were thinking.
Her voice broke and she lifted her hands into the air as if she was asking the sky.
What was I thinking?
She started to cry harder. I could tell how hard she had been trying to keep it in, but this wasn't something she could hold back any longer. Her body seemed to need it, and she sank lower into the chair as she sobbed. Tears spilled down her cheeks, and her skin reddened even more. She touched her hand to her stomach and heaved. I didn't know what to say that could make this better, and maybe she was right, I couldn't fix it. It was beyond me.
I can't even afford a ticket home. God, what am I going to do? They are so angry, and now they are making me doubt everything, she cried.
A few seconds went by before she added, panicked,
I'm so scared.
She was full on sobbing, choking into a heavy fit of coughing. I grabbed her a cup of water as quickly as I could and watched her gulp down the entire thing. She patted her chest.
My chest hurts. My head feels like it's going to explode.
The tears stopped falling from her eyes, but her body was still reacting as if she were hysterically crying. Her shoulders shook with dry sobs. Within a few seconds, her panic took over, and I watched her shift into worried mom mode. Her hand flew to her stomach again, and I tried to reach for her to offer her more water. She shook her head, taking deep breaths, hysterically, tearlessly, sobbing. Her sobs were almost loud enough to drown out the noise of the back door opening, and Austin strolling through like we were even on speaking terms. I got a little dizzy as I took the two of them in. Chapter 7. My brother looked like he hadn't slept in a week, and he also looked like a porcupine with his blonde hair sticking up in the front and around the sides, but soaked and dripping down his forehead. There he was, in a blue t-shirt and black jeans ripped at the knees, looking dazed and confused. His appearance made my anger toward him bite even more. His black sneakers squeaked across my clean kitchen floor. I moved toward him, speaking in a low voice.
Why the hell are you here?
Care, come on. His tired eyes went from me to where Elodie was at the table, and he immediately rushed to her.
What the hell, are you okay?
He shouted, then turned to me.
Is she okay?
My heart was racing, and my chest lit up with borderline rage. I couldn't believe his audacity. He had our mother's nerve. And our father's, too. This was insane. Right then, he looked years younger than he was. He was never the kind of boy who was in control of his emotions. We were twins in so many ways, but that wasn't one of them. The way he was looking at Elodie reminded me of the little blue-eyed boy who cried when his dad's deployment orders got moved up by 6 months. He used to cry every time our dad would deploy. The opposite of me. As we got older, I felt relief when they came, even though I'd never admit that to anyone.
Are you okay?
Austin asked Elodie again, as she doubled over as far as she could go. Her body was shaking, her arms wrapped around her stomach.
My stomach feels weird. The baby...
She shook her head.
I don't want to be dramatic if this isn't something serious.
You're pregnant and don't seem fine. Let's just call your doctor or someone,
my brother insisted. I tried to think of who to call to help us. It's not like I could call my mom and ask her what to do. Or Estelle.
We need to take her to Martin right now,
he said impatiently.
What?
I started, then stopped.
The hospital,
he clarified, as I nodded.
Duh, my brother was talking about the hospital on Fort Benning with the same name as Kale. On a scale from 1 to 10, what's your...
Austin mocked, in a voice that was supposed to mimic a doctor.
Was that your doctor impression?
She asked him through labored breaths.
Yep. Sorry I'm no Dr. Stewart or whatever the hell Patrick Dempsey's name is on that doctor show.
Austin made Elodie smile, though the color of her face was getting more and more transparent as we all sort of laughed. Inside, I was panicking, but I was also trying to be outwardly calm by laughing with them. And it was genuine laughter. I felt empty and whole and concerned and like everything was fine. Emotions are funny like that, how we can feel so many things at once. The human power to be all the things at the same time, the pure weight of so many different things piling onto my chest, felt like an ancient and heavy punishment from a very unsympathetic and callous God. Feeling too much led to pain and problems and trauma and unrequited love and loss of control all in one person. And then there was the fact that Elodie was possibly going into early labor in my kitchen. My brain was all over the damn place, and we were laughing about Grey's Anatomy?
I'm more of a Doug Ross kind of girl anyway,
Elodie told him through heavy breaths. Her hand held her stomach, and she arched her back.
I don't know who that is, but...
She gawked at him.
What do you mean you don't? It's an American series, and it's George Clooney, and you don't know?
Elodie arched again.
Guys,
I said in my head about 3 times before I actually said it to them. They both looked over at me. Elodie was ghost-like now.
Okay, we should go.
She agreed with me before I even had to force her. Elodie, can you stand up? Should we just go straight to the emergency room? Let me Google it, just to check. I knew that she was having a panic attack of some sort, and it would probably pass soon. Or get worse. You just never knew. But with a baby growing inside of her, there were no chances to be taken, especially since she had gotten a call from her doctor about her blood sugar level just an hour ago. I Googled her symptoms and within seconds found confirmation that we should definitely be going to the emergency room at this point.
Yep, we need to go. Let's go, Elle.
Her phone vibrated on the counter. I checked to make sure Elodie wasn't looking at me, and turned the phone over so I could see the familiar photo of her father filling the screen once more. I ignored the call while flipping the phone back upside down.
We just need to make sure the baby is fine. It won't take long. I'll go with you.
The ER won't be as busy right now. I'll come too, Austin assured her.
You don't need to come, Austin. Elodie sighed, and I watched the rise and fall of her chest. She sounded like she could breathe better than a minute ago, but she was clearly not okay.
Austin can come.
I looked at her quizzically, but it wasn't the time to question her. Elodie nodded as Austin bent down and tucked his arms under her legs, lifting her body into his arms like she was a bag of groceries.
I can walk,
Elodie protested, but didn't make a move to get down. He shook his head and lifted the hood of her jacket back over her hair to cover it from the rain, and she sighed.
As Austin carried her across my yard to the car, I searched for my keys, which turned out to be in the pocket of my uniform the entire time. My hands were trembling, even though everything felt pretty normal. Well, not normal. But not like in the movies, where everyone is screaming and rushing and someone's crying and it's just completely chaotic. My hands being in my pockets reminded me that I had to get to work. Like, right now. Fuck my life. Running past them, I opened the back door of my car, and Austin gently placed Elodie on the seat. When he finished, and I ensured she was comfortable, it took everything in me not to tell my brother to sit in the back. Or, better yet, to go back to Kale's house where he was likely still staying. His presence was clearly making Elodie feel better. Maybe because she thought, rightfully so, that I would have no clue what to do here. But Austin wouldn't either. Whatever her reason, she seemed to be calmer now that he had arrived. She had her face buried in her hands with her head leaning against the back seat. As he opened the passenger door, I sighed dramatically, hoping he would hear me, and got in the car. Immediately, I turned the music on and checked on Elodie again. Austin was staring out the window as she wept in the back seat. His leg was shaking like it always did when he was worried. I thought I saw his lips moving, but I couldn't hear anything over Ryan Seacrest's voice on the radio. I didn't know what to say to either of them, so I just drove the car. When I pulled onto the highway, my service engine light came on. When it rained, it poured. Literally. "Elle, do you have your military ID?" I called to her over the squeak of my windshield wipers, ignoring the engine light. I hoped she did, because, depending on the gate guard's mood, being a woman in pain wouldn't stop them from turning us away without it. Even her blotchy, tear-stained face and pregnant stomach most likely wouldn't sway them. "I grabbed it from the entertainment center," Austin told us. "Listen," he started, as I switched lanes to pass a semi-truck. "Don't," I snapped. He put his hands together on his lap, and I added, "Not now." I glanced at Elodie in the rearview mirror. She was looking down at her stomach, tears streaking her face. She didn't need to get dragged into this building blowout between Austin and me. Elodie caught my eyes.
"I never had these attacks until I moved here. Everything is such a mess lately."
"Your life was way different before. You also didn't have a husband at war or a pineapple-sized baby in your belly." Her eyes lit up a little, and the corner of her mouth lifted for a quick second.
"Yes, this is true. I'm sorry for ruining everyone's day."
She caught my eyes in the mirror again. She had stopped crying, but her shoulders were still shaking.
"You didn't ruin anything," Austin comforted her.
Even though I was still unbelievably pissed at him, I was grateful he was helping Elodie. "We'll be there in like 10 minutes, I said. Austin reached over and tried to touch my hand, something he used to do when our parents would bicker in the car. Usually on the way home from a fun family weekend that my mom forced on all of us. She couldn't stand being in the house much. Just like my dad couldn't stand her. It was like our parents simply couldn't be around one another for the full 2.5 days of a weekend, so by the time we drove home on Sunday from whatever escape my mom had talked my dad into, they would scream at each other in the car. It always started with a joke from my dad and ended with a slammed door or my mom sleeping on the swing on the porch. I swore she liked it better out there than inside my dad's officer-grade house, which she never felt was hers. Sometimes our parents were the reason Austin and I bonded and clung to one another. At other times, they were why we pushed each other away. This time, when I jerked my hand away from his, Austin was fully the villain. He was just like our dad. And even though I was sure my dad had something to do with his enlisting, neither he nor our mom could be blamed for this. Austin had betrayed me, and I didn't want him to touch me. I didn't even want him in my car. My brother leaned against the window in the passenger seat and stared ahead. I knew that look. That devastation and longing for forgiveness and approval. but I couldn't give it to him. He hadn't popped a tire on my bike or knocked the head off my doll like when we were kids. This was a sun and moon difference, night and day. And it felt good to hurt him this way, to not give in and forgive him just because I hated when he was sad. He'd made a choice, despite the promise we'd made to one another as kids. He would be shipped off to basic training, then off to Iraq or Afghanistan or whatever country we were invading at that moment. It was sure to be poison for him, as my experience with the army had always been, and I wasn't ready to talk to him about it. No matter how many times I played out the conversation in my head, it wasn't going to change the reality of what was coming, whether I liked it or not. And I really wasn't ready to have that fight in this moment. The three of us drove in silence, each quietly suffering in our own way. Chapter 8. We had been waiting almost an hour before the nurse called Elodie's name. Austin had stayed with us the whole time, showing Elodie pictures of ugly babies on Facebook. He'd made her laugh, but that didn't mean he was suddenly a saint. Elodie stood and I followed her, past the children with red faces and snotty noses, past the soldiers in ACUs, past all the other people with phones stuck to their palms, including many, many worn-out parents and hyper-children. The waiting area was huge and had been depressing us into silence the entire hour. Before we left the room, Austin called my name from where he sat. I turned around and gave him a look open for interpretation. It could have meant, fuck off, or I'm busy, please hold. I didn't really care which one he chose to accept. Beyond the door, there was a child coughing somewhere, a raspy, wet noise that sounded like something out of a horror movie. We passed three curtain-lined triage exam rooms, impermanent and lacking much dignity. I hated hospitals or anything that made me feel like I didn't have freedom. My stomach sank as the child kept coughing and began to cry. When we got to Elodie's pseudo-room, the nurse weighed her and took her blood pressure, then asked me to step out. I looked at Elodie, and she nodded. I needed to call Molly. When I got my phone out, I saw that she had called me 3 times. She was going to kill me. I also had a voicemail, but since I was going to call her to get chewed out anyway, I didn't need to listen to it. She was going to be furious. I was already 40 minutes late. Leaning against the only actual wall I could find, I called Molly, but didn't get an answer. I sighed, feeling relieved that I could just talk to her voicemail instead. But right as the shop's voice message came on, I got the double beeping sound that meant Molly was calling in on the other line. I took a deep breath, switched over, and told her what happened. I explained to her that I could come in within an hour, but Elodie was surely out for the day. She told me we both cost her 2 new clients. But right as we were hanging up, she told me to tell Elodie she hoped she was okay. I smiled at her gesture. I thought about slipping out the back door of the hospital instead of having a conversation with Austin in the waiting room. I wasn't ready to talk to him about why he'd done what he had and why he hadn't told me. I would eventually need answers, but I wasn't sure I was ready for them. If I knew Cale's involvement in getting him to enlist was some sick game to get back at me for whatever my dad did to Cale and his friends, I would feel better. Hopefully. At least it would make sense then. I sort of hated my dad for the things he had done inside our home, so now knowing what he was being held responsible for the things he did outside of it, and how evil he could be, almost made me welcome Cale's revenge. Almost. Did I want to know the details? Not really. Would it make me feel better? In reality, probably not. Would I be able to avoid them both forever? Unfortunately, no. But today I could. As if on cue, my brother burst into the hallway where I was standing. Fortunately, right then the monotone nurse popped out from Elodie's space and asked that I follow her through the curtain.
She's asking for you, too. She gestured to Austin as well, which was fine, because at least I wouldn't have to talk to him about our drama in front of Elodie.
Sitting on the bed, with her shirt pulled up to just below her chest, her belly bare, Elodie looked so young. She had these strap-like things on her stomach with stickers on the end to hold little wires to monitor her baby. She wasn't crying anymore and seemed calm. Tired, but calm. I sat on the edge of the bed and grabbed her hand. The deep blue of her veins showed through her paleness, causing her exposed skin to look grayish. As I got a closer look, it made me nauseous how sickly she appeared beneath the fluorescent lights. My stomach turned. I was used to a healthy pink in her cheeks and a brightness in her eyes that wasn't there. She touched her hand to her stomach. The baby is okay. I just need to watch my stress level. The baby is completely okay. She pointed up at the IV bag hanging next to her bed. I'm dehydrated, so they're going to give me these. I breathed out, releasing some of my tension in relief.
Hey, aren't you the Fisher boy? Asked a nurse, whom I hadn't noticed had been standing there all along.
I turned to look at him and saw he was looking at Austin, who stood in the corner with his arms crossed against his chest. Austin said,
no,
so nonchalantly and looked so genuinely honest that I almost believed him. What a good liar he was.
Elodie glanced down, avoiding the lie.
I looked at the man's face, but didn't see anything familiar. Austin was looking at his phone, pretending the whole exchange hadn't happened. The man seemed suspicious and annoyed, but just nodded.
Why? I asked him, my curiosity taking over.
Austin jerked his head toward me, clearly unhappy that I had engaged when he had dodged the question in the first place. Another nurse popped her head in.
We need you, broken arm,
she told her colleague. He looked at the two of us for a moment before exiting the room. I glared at my brother.
Do you know him? What was that about? I think he's Dad's friend.
So why did you lie?
He shrugged. Like I said, I think he's Dad's friend.
Austin looked at me as if that simple statement said everything I needed to know.
You sure seem used to lying. Wonder where you got that, was all I could say.
Austin moved closer to me and lifted his arms in the air.
I didn't lie to you,
he whispered desperately.
His words hit me, right smack in the middle of my chest. I could feel that rumble, my temper shaking just below the surface.
My brother tilted his head back and sighed.
Karina, I knew if I told you, you would freak out. Wonder where you got that.
I could feel anger budding around the sting of his accusation of being like our mother. We did that so much, comparing one another or ourselves to our parents as a way of inflicting hurt. Elodie was looking patiently back and forth between my brother and me, unaware of what we were talking about. I gently squeezed her hand. The last thing she needed was more stress. I had to put her first, even though my temper was barely manageable.
I'm so glad the baby is okay.
I was worried about you, both of you. She nodded, lightly tightening her grip on my hand.
Me too. I'm sorry for all these problems. And this thing keeps checking the baby's heartbeat.
She looked up at the beeping machines and the equipment lining the wall behind the head of her bed. There's nothing to be sorry about.
You didn't do anything wrong, I told her.
Why do women always apologize for things they can't control?
I did it. Elodie, my mom.
Everything feels wrong.
My parents. Philip, he's...
Elodie looked away from my eyes to the small television hanging in the corner. The thin curtain didn't really separate us much from the rest of the patients, and I'm sure our neighbors could hear everything we were saying.
I heard the bustle of nurses and that god-awful cough again. All of it was making me antsy, but I needed to be there for her. I took in her frail body. Did something else happen with Philip? I caught her hollow gaze and hesitated with my brother there and the other patients and the lack of privacy in a place like this. You don't have to tell me if you don't want to talk about it.
The Facebook messages I told you about? Well, they said that the woman my husband was cheating on me with is deployed with him. I'm married. And so I sent Philip a message about it and he just replied.
She looked at Austin before me. She rubbed her baby bump over the thin hospital gown that draped over her body like cheap paper. How did he react? I asked her.
He said it's a total lie and he can't believe I had the nerve to even question him. He's really pissed off now.
I looked up at Austin, but he was staring at the floor. I imagined he was trying to make Elodie forget he was there so she would be more comfortable. Philip's anger toward Elodie was a huge red flag to me. These kinds of stories were very familiar in a place where people got married well before they could legally drink. Married and deployed, then a baby, then deployed again. Underpaid, overworked, and underappreciated for enlistment after enlistment. It was a cycle, and Elodie seemed to be trapped in her own version of it. And this was just the beginning for her.
When will you two talk next? I asked.
He was supposed to call me tonight, but he said in the message that now he won't be.
He's basically punishing me for accusing him.
Even though I didn't accuse him, I only asked a question.
Austin made a noise like a grumble, but didn't say a word. He looked up at the ceiling and rolled his eyes.
Can I say something? I asked timidly.
I knew Elodie would say yes, but I felt like it was important to ask before giving my opinion. In return, she smiled, biting down gently on her bottom lip as she nodded her head.
The whole thing with the messages seems like an intentional, personal attack, and you should be able to ask your husband about it.
You're the one here dealing with it and dealing with your parents on top of it. So he should be more sensitive to that. His defensive response worries me, if I'm being honest.
Elodie winced, but I kept going.
Hear me out. I'm by no means saying that he's cheating on you, but that kind of thing does happen a lot.
The lines are so often blurred and people spend a lot of time away from each other.
I'm not accusing him or saying I agree with your parents.
I'm just suggesting that you investigate a little.
Seriously, Karina?
My brother interrupted.
Investigate how?
Elodie asked me, and I was relieved when she didn't seem too offended. Mostly curious.
You could message the person's account yourself? Or keep asking Philip.
But asking Philip might lead to more trouble than it's worth before you actually know if there's anything to be worried about. Plus, he might lie. I looked at my brother. And if the guy who sent the messages is lying after all, and you end up stressed out and in the emergency room because of it, I'm gonna find him myself, I said, meaning every word. And his wife. Elodie didn't laugh, but I didn't really expect her to. She jutted her chin out and up.
Okay, let's investigate. Even though I have faith in my husband, he's pissing me off right now.
Elodie and I smiled, and Austin shook his head. She looked around a moment more.
How do we investigate again? She asked,
and our laughter filled the small space. Chapter 9. The lobby of the emergency room was even more packed than it had been 2 hours ago. The doctor wanted to monitor Elodie a little longer, and I had to go to work. I hoped that one of her family readiness group friends might be able to drive her home when she was cleared to go. She seemed happy, and even a little glowy after they pumped her full of whatever vitamins filled up the IV bag. Austin offered to drop me off at work and drive her home later in my car when she was discharged.
Around Elodie, he seemed to become quite the gentleman, and we both appreciated the offer. At the same time, I didn't know how long it had been since he'd driven, and I didn't really want to leave him with my car, so I politely shot that down. Elodie sent a text out to her group chat to see if any of her army wife friends would pick her up. They had all been texting or messaging or whatever for the last 30 minutes, her phone dinging and her fingers tapping on the screen from the hospital bed. The group of wives on the receiving end all seemed eager to help, and she had multiple offers immediately. The woman who volunteered first was Toni. I thought I remembered her last name, Tharp, as Elodie had mentioned her more than a few times. Selfishly, I wondered who would pick me up if I was at the hospital and needed someone to depend on. Sometimes, like now, it felt like I was just floating around life alone, surrounded by humans who cared about everyone except me. As I walked next to Austin, past the rows and rows of green upholstered chairs, beyond ready to get away from the smell of the hospital and the coughing children in the lobby, he asked, "Can I ride with you, or are you so mad that you're gonna make me walk home?" "I haven't decided." "Plus, you don't have a home," I reminded with a bite, one that he could not only handle, but deserved. Even though I knew he was living at Kale's, he was technically still couch surfing. "See, even more of a reason for you to pity me," he argued playfully. I rolled my eyes, and he nudged my shoulder. "We can talk about it on the way. I can get a ride from your place. I need to get my own car after basic training." Realizing what he'd said, he looked down at me. "Care, I don't." We stopped walking. I looked him straight in the eyes. "You're going either way, aren't you? What's the point of being angry now?" Even my voice had given in to the reality of it all. Realistically, I couldn't resign myself to never speaking to my brother ever again. Especially since he would be going to whatever state they shipped him off to soon. There was no way around it. That was the harsh reality of the military. Once you signed, the freedom of making choices was gone. I didn't want to lose him to the army, but I also didn't want to lose him to my anger. I hadn't thought much about what army job Austin might have chosen for himself. And as I asked him, I hoped he would say something like dental hygienist, mechanic, any type of trade he could use in the civilian world. "What's your MOS? Please tell me you're a paper pusher." My dad always called anyone who wasn't in direct combat a paper pusher, and I prayed that Austin would be one. It was also more likely that he would be able to get a job after he did his time in the army that way. I knew from my father talking with his hands over a plate piled with chicken bones that the infantry soldiers worked long, unappreciated hours and were treated like shit most of the time. The abusive culture was something no one wanted to talk about. Not that other soldiers weren't mistreated, but infantry was mostly considered the bottom of the barrel by people, especially by those who abused their power. Austin stuttered a little bit.
"My MOS is infantry."
"The most dangerous assignment. Just like Philip, Kale, Mendoza." "Austin," I continued walking, slowly. It was all I could think to do.
"I'm not as smart as you, okay? I was never good at school. You know that. I barely made it through high school. This was my only option. The Air Force wouldn't even take me. And even with the Army, I fucking failed the ASVAB the first time I took it. I'm lucky I even got in."
"Lucky," I scoffed, eyeing the wide front door and looking through the glass wall to the parking lot. It was barely raining anymore. My heart ached as it hit me that he had taken the enlistment test more than once. This wasn't a spur-of-the-moment choice. He had been trying to enlist for some time, and obviously hadn't felt like he could tell me about it. "When was that? When did this start?" I asked. He sped up as I did, not letting me avoid him.
"A few months ago, I've been going back and forth,
I know I should have told you. I just knew you would be mad. It's not like I was going to keep it from you forever. It just happened. Even Dad's reaction. I shook my head. I'm not mad. Well, I am. It's more complicated than that. I'm confused why you left me out of a life-changing decision. Is Kale the only one who knew? I must have really pissed off something in the universe, because right as I said his name, Kale appeared in the doorway of the waiting room. He clocked Austin and me immediately. His eyes went to my brother first, then quickly to me, confusion taking over his otherwise stoic face. His demeanor always showed that he knew exactly where he was supposed to be and exactly when he was supposed to be there. It was more than an army thing, it was a Kale thing. We were at least 20 feet away from each other, and I could already feel his energy consuming the space. I tried to fight it, to push down all the things that were happening to my mind and body as he got closer and I had no exit plan. I needed to look like I wasn't surprised to see him, even though we were in an emergency room and I was very much surprised to see him. I straightened my posture and took a step backward, shocked inside but not showing it, that he was standing there right in front of me. It took me a few seconds to notice that behind Kale was Mendoza, and they were both dressed in civilian clothes. Kale looked so different in his everyday clothes than his uniform. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Except both sides of Kale were good, for the most part. Besides the fact that he was a liar and had completely betrayed me, if anything, he was more like Damon Salvatore from The Vampire Diaries, with two distinctly different sides when in love. Not that Kale was in love with me, and definitely not the way Damon loved Elena Gilbert. I wasn't even sure that type of love even existed in reality. And in reality, Damon would be in prison. I had imagined that when I saw Kale again, it would feel like a gut punch. Instead, it was a slow pain, seeping into me. Processing my shock, I found myself fighting against my own emotions, needing to remind myself that he was bad. He was bad for me, and he was a traitor. Looking at him standing in front of me, all I could think about was the way the sun hit his coffee-colored eyes, and the way his quiet laughter filled my small living room. I had planned out this scenario over and over in my head. What I would say, what he would say, what I would be wearing, which was far from the work clothes I was in now. In my dream scenario, I was beautiful, glowing with post-breakup pride and sleek hair, a pretty dress, and high heels that made my short legs appear longer. Clearly, my imagination was far-fetched, and I'd had unrealistic hopes because I can't walk 10 feet in high heels, but alas, there I was and there he was. I was heartbroken all over again and could almost feel the rain soaking me from the last time I saw him. I wished Kale had been wearing his uniform instead of street clothes, because it would have made it a tiny bit easier to pretend he was just another soldier and not mine. Not that he was mine anymore. But in black Nike sweatpants and a fitted light t-shirt, part of me wished he was. Finally, I looked at Mendoza, who was clear as day, staring at me. His shirt was the same red color as his eyes, which matched the red of the blood seeping through what looked like a white t-shirt wrapped around his hand. The blood sent a wave of shock through me, but Mendoza's face was relaxed, with no sign of tension or a care in the world. "What the hell happened?" Austin asked them. Kale looked back at Mendoza, down to his hand, and then met my brother's eyes. He was so calm considering where we were and the amount of blood coming from Mendoza.
"His hand needs stitches."
"So he says," Mendoza said, a smile curling the corners of his lips.
"What the hell, man?"
Austin's concern for his friend was obvious in the way he moved closer to him.
"It's not a big deal. Shit happens. People hit shit."
He shrugged. Austin chuckled.
"Yeah, right. Looks like a big deal to me."
He pointed at his hand. Kale rolled his eyes and leaned his head back all the way, looking at the ceiling. He was doing everything possible to avoid looking at me, and I couldn't seem to stop looking at him.
This is just a regular Tuesday, man,
he groaned sarcastically.
It's not even Tuesday, bro,
Austin smiled. Were all men this ridiculous? Mendoza lifted his hand a bit, and a drop of red dotted the floor. He swiped it with a sneaker. I started to feel a little panicked, even though the three of them were being so casual. You guys should go check in. It takes forever. I kept my eyes on the sheet vinyl flooring and pointed at the now smeared drop of blood. Mendoza used his free hand to tug at the t-shirt to tighten it.
Yeah, let's get this over with,
he agreed with me and started to walk to the check-in desk with Kale.
Wait.
Kale quickly turned on his heel and snapped his head toward Austin, again avoiding me.
What are you guys doing here?
His eyes narrowed to suspicious slits, looking my brother up, down, before his hand reached out for the pocket of Austin's jacket. I froze. Why was he so worried about Austin, who was clearly fine, and not me? I guess I had already become a part of his past, though it had only been a few weeks. Austin jerked away from Kale's grasp on him.
Dude,
he said defensively.
We're here because of Elodie, not me.
He pressed his hands to his chest and tapped over his heart.
I'm good.
Kale glanced at me, then back to my brother. He hadn't looked at me long enough to actually see if I was okay, but it was clear he didn't give a shit.
What happened to Elodie?
Mendoza was the one to react first. As Austin's words sunk in, Kale snapped his head up again. The way he moved was so fast, so soldier-like.
Wait, Elodie? What happened to Elodie? Does Phillips know?
He pulled out his phone and stared at the screen for a second like he was going to call Philip, but then realized that he couldn't, because that's not how war worked. Kale's eyes darted to and away from me so rapidly that a blink would have missed it. It was obvious that he was trying to avoid me, even though he was the one who'd fucked up. It pissed me off. If anything, I should be the one avoiding him. His body language would suggest to any onlooker that he and I were strangers. No, enemies. And that pissed me off even more. I thought, well, hoped, that maybe if I could keep his eyes on mine for just a few seconds, if I used the sincere look that was reminiscent of the nights we spent lying in my bed with the box fan on my dresser, whispering softly behind words and sounds that only Kale had ever heard from my mouth. I just knew I would see the sadness, the regret, that I wanted and expected to be on his face. I hoped he hadn't heard me mention his name when he appeared in the doorway. I wanted to be in control of our first encounter to keep him from manipulating me. I wanted him to hear my voice and remember those times the way I did. I cut off the rant inside my head to keep my temper at bay and my tone casual while my fingernails were digging into my palms. She's okay. We were here to check on the baby because she... I started to say, but realized I shouldn't give him or Mendoza too much information about her personal life, especially since they were clearly on her husband's team, and he was directly responsible for most of the Elodie stress.
Because she what?
Kale prodded. It wasn't my place to tell him anything about her, and really, I should have just told him to mind his own damn business and worry about his friend who was currently bleeding through a t-shirt. But for whatever reason, we chose to stand there, Wild West style, not making eye contact, but not moving. It felt like he was waiting for me to walk away first, and that just wasn't going to happen.
Is anyone going to fill me in?
Kale asked, cutting off Mendoza, who was wondering the same. Really, what business is it of yours? You haven't seen her lately, and you clearly have other stuff going on. You can either go ask her yourself or wait until her asshole husband tells you, I snapped. Kale's face twisted, and Mendoza's smile disappeared, Austin shifted awkwardly between us, deciding whether or not to take on the role of referee.
"We don't know anything yet, but she's okay," my brother told them.
I cut him off before he could add anything else. "And she hasn't talked to her husband yet, so you should do her a favor and wait until she does before running off to tell him yourself." I hoped and prayed that my voice sounded as harsh as I needed it to. Kale simply nodded and looked from me to Austin. No reaction. Back to the cold, emotionless soldier I'd seen plenty of times before. What a fucking joke.
"Let me know when you find out, and I hope Elodie is okay,"
Kale told my brother, affection wrapped around her beautiful name. As Austin agreed, I studied Kale's expression. It was obvious that he cared about Elodie and her baby, but for someone left with so little detail, he was eerily composed.
"It was scary, but she's fine, I think."
Austin paused.
"I hope,"
he added, wiping his forehead. Kale nodded coolly, the face of a soldier doing his duty. Why wouldn't he at least look at me? Why did I want him to so badly that it physically hurt? My mouth was dry as Austin asked him something I didn't hear, because my thoughts were all over the place, beating loudly in my head.
"I'm gonna go check in. The tequila is starting to wear off."
Mendoza walked away slowly, like he had a heavy rucksack on his back. Austin and Kale were still talking, but I couldn't keep up. Their voices sounded like the teacher in Charlie Brown. My eyes focused on Kale's mouth, the sharpness of his square jaw. He was freshly shaven, looking youthful compared to me. My face had broken out, and I'd barely put any makeup on, hoping my skin would heal faster and honestly not really caring what I looked like lately. He looked like he'd slept at least 8 hours and had coffee and didn't have a care in the world. I had too many. I should have brushed my teeth, changed my clothes, washed my uniform yesterday, plucked my brows. I should have worn at least a little makeup, but I hadn't expected to see Kale. Or to see anyone, or go anywhere but my dim, candlelit treatment room at work. I had my hair tossed halfway up, the top part still powdery with half-rubbed-in dry shampoo, and the roots slightly damp from the rain. My eyes were puffy from lack of sleep, lack of motivation to do anything, really. And Kale looked like he had never been better, which was probably true. Even under the harsh light of the sterile hospital, his dark skin was glowing. The mint green sweatshirt he wore looked great on him, as did his black cotton joggers. They were fitted to his body, clinging to the thickness of his thighs and hanging perfectly on his hips. I loved the way he always made street clothes look so good. I had been swooning over him. His outfit, his vibe, his everything. I wasn't worried about him noticing. It's not like he was paying attention to me anyway. My fingers twitched as I looked at the scar above his thick eyebrow and thought about how soft it had felt under my fingertips. It seemed like I hadn't seen him in months, not just weeks. His white sneakers looked brand new, as always. My work shoes were dirty and loosely laced up. I felt sloppy next to him. Even though I looked like shit, I wanted some sign that he cared enough to acknowledge me. Mendoza came back over to us with an update that there were 3 people ahead of him. He said the hospital staff were probably tired of seeing him here, which made me wonder just how often he visited the ER.
"How you been, Karina?"
he asked, his brown eyes slightly hooded. He gently rocked his shoulder into mine and glared at Kale and my brother. It made me smile that he seemed to notice my discomfort.
"Let's talk."
Kale's voice sent a shock through me, but before I could react, I realized he was talking to my brother, not me. The two of them walked a few feet away from us and leaned against the white plaster wall. Ugh. I turned my attention back to Mendoza. I swallowed, trying to wet my mouth.
Good, Mendoza. Just working.
You? I mean, outside of your whole hand massacre thing.
He let out a laugh that made my heart feel less heavy. Mendoza had that kind of energy that just made you feel warm, even in a place like the hospital.
Hand massacre aside, I'm great. And who knows, maybe they'll give me a day or two off now since I'm hurt,
Mendoza said, darkly laughing.